especially the students. There's going to be so much lost opportunities for these kiddos. And so I'm really hopeful that everybody's hearing a lot of these messages and they see, you know, everything that's going on.
Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial 102.9. There was a school committee meeting last week. There was a few other things going on as well, but we have chalkboard chat today with our school committee chair, Dave Callaghan. Dave, happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday, Steve. Right on. We already got Marty thinking about the barbecues I'm going to have this weekend, a long weekend. I'm very excited.
There is plenty happening besides the budget, the override, redistricting, Memorial Day. We get a chance to, you know, spend some time, reflect, and honor those who enable us to do what we do. So it's all good.
Well, it is. And I know a lot of some of our schools, they'll have they got Memorial Day celebrations. And over at Jefferson, they invite some veterans to kind of come. And so there's a lot of great stuff that goes on this weekend.
Yes. So once upon a time, there was a recent school committee meeting. Do you still remember it? I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
it wasn't. No, that one I definitely remember that. I remember a lot of the stuff that we've been doing for quite some time. And yeah, I feel like we've been sprinting towards the end of the school year right now. But but yeah, we had a big meeting, big couple of meetings, as we really ultimately kind of voted to just restructure the educational landscape here in Franklin.
Hopefully people will have at least caught wind of it now and then start tapping in, emotions aside, and I think the analogy that Lucas gave probably a couple of times, so it kind of sticks with me, where he set up a key group of stakeholders, and he may have done it more once or twice, but I don't remember that part specifically, but kind of around the table, you were around the table, you saw out, this is the layout, this is the number of students, number of teachers, et cetera. Then you stepped back and said, how do we really arrange the existing buildings, the best facilities, and then align the teachers and students in order to deliver ultimately the portrait of a graduate, which clearly earlier stakeholders have done, but then the recent work has said, yes, we all need to be involved in that because that is our work.
Absolutely. And it was, and we had, yeah, there's, I mean, there's, you mentioned, there's a lot of emotions when it comes to, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to be moving kids from, and families, from, you know, one school to another one. And we heard from many of those families, but it's also, yeah, it's what we're really trying to do is to kind of utilize all of the facilities that we have to the best of our ability. You know, it's going to result in many of these kiddos kind of going to the most modern, school buildings that we have across the district and really providing a great level of service to every single one of the kids across the district too. Mm-hmm. And that was something it was highlighted, and I'm sure we touched on it too, but during the meeting, it really, Lucas kept kind of hammering the point home too, that when we kind of look across the entire district, that there were some schools that like elementary schools that had like 200 and change students, but then across town, it was like over 500, close to 600. Mm-hmm. And so we saw this massive disparity in terms of classroom sizes, where, you know, some would have a classroom of only 16 kids, other ones would have kindergarten classrooms with 25. And it's not fair. It's not equitable. And so what the idea would be is as we kind of move all of the really just kind of consolidate down to two elementary schools, a north elementary and a south, be able to level off those classroom sizes, be able to provide so much more support as we don't have teachers that, you know, might be kind of just traveling from one school to the other school. And while still maintaining that level of excellence that we kind of come to expect here in Franklin too.
Yeah, and I think the other way to look at it, and replaying a line I've used somewhere along the way, but effectively, as hard a decision as it was, moving towards the equity, moving towards the efficiency, you're effectively going from five elementary schools in five separate buildings to four schools in two buildings, right? So now to make those adjustments, it's going to be much easier. And I know from experience where my wife was a kindergarten teacher for many, many years, and Lucas and prior superintendents have adjusted, you know, if the numbers are such, you know, call it 60 students for K, well, you need three classrooms, but you get to 62, 63, 60. When do you add that fourth one to truly be equitable? It becomes tough in a tight budget. But now you've got capability, at least in the structure, for eight classrooms north and south. You may not need eight, but at some point in time, you may. And tying in as well, the demographics were re-updated, including the COVID, the post 2020 census final data, et cetera. So we're still going to bottom out at about, 4,500 before coming back slightly to about 4,700. So the days of the 6,000 students, that's not here anymore.
Exactly. And it's not projected to be here, you know, through the next 10 years when we were kind of looking at these forecasts as well. And so it's, you know, it'd certainly be one situation if this was a temporary little dip, but this is pretty much like what, you know, Franklin should expect, you know, over the next decade, you know, a plus. And so this really kind of provides us with that equity across the whole district and really just a more stable structure for the whole educational system for many years to come.
Yeah.
And
even with the quote, the demographics are only going out 10 years, but realistically, based on some of the other discussions, and we can certainly see confirmed by the master plan when they come out with their piece, based upon what we've been seeing in the real estate market and the housing market, we don't have the space and or the capacity at this point to really add that kind of growth to build that kind of population. We're struggling right now maintaining population because we just don't have the housing available for that.
Yeah, exactly. There is no space. And, you know, I was listening to, it was part of the economic development or the new growth podcast you had with Mel and with Kobe. Mm-hmm. And they kind of talk about, like, in other parts of the country, like out west, they can just kind of keep expanding. There's plenty of space. And so if they need more space, they just expand out into no man's land. We don't have that. You know, at this point, Franklin, you know, if there's land, it's, for the most part, it's all going to be built. There's no, you know, not a lot of opportunities for, you know, many single family houses to be built. And I think you also kind of have that, you know, everything with the CPA, like the 200 acres of land that's been purchased and all that, it's fantastic and it's amazing, but it's also taking away from other opportunities to be able to kind of put on, you know, new growth or new developments. And so this is really a good snapshot of what Franklin's going to look like for many years to come. And just, I think by, you know, so it's something where we might've spoken about this too, where other districts, when you kind of talk about like the inequities across the district, there are some places where they'll just kind of redistrict every couple of years. And so they'll see like, well, you know what, right now, you know, it's not appropriate to have a classroom of 16, but then on the other side of town, a classroom of 25. What they'll end up doing is they'll just keep carving up the lines to say, all right, well, I know you went to this school this year, but, you know, next fall, you're actually going to be moving over here so we can kind of keep rebalancing. And that also isn't fair to the families. You know, this is a big ask that we're asking for the community, but it's something that can be sustainable and really just kind of done once. So that way, you know, everybody can start to settle into what this new landscape is going to look like.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key questions that people are out there still slightly misinformed, because they're asking the question, well, if you're putting all the middle schoolers in one building, how are they going to fit? Well, you've done the calculations, the demographics and the facilities analysis has shown we have capacity to grow within the facility to handle the middle school. So it's not going to be, it'll be a combined school, yes, but it still will be within the capacity of the building room. And similarly for the elementary. So you've got kind of the K to two wing, the 3 to 5 wing, they'll still have some growth capabilities within them so that they won't overlap like they are in the Kelly Sullivan situation today.
Yeah, and that's something else too, because yeah, like right now what's happening, because it's Keller that has the astronomical growth, and that they keep having to kind of spread into the middle school side of the complex. And with this plan, what we're able to kind of do, and what's already kind of been mapped out, is to say, well, now Andy Sullivan Keller, it's just the elementary that's going to be north, and you know, K to five. And when there are classrooms on, you know, if the, you know, we got, you know, some of the smaller classrooms, maybe on the other side of the building, that it's not necessarily, it's not, you know, a second grader with seventh or eighth graders. It's a second grader with a third grader. And so, but there's a lot of great opportunities too. I think, you know, we'll still be able to kind of have so much of that collaboration. Like I know, my kids are at Kennedy, you know, they were always able to have like their reading buddies, where they had a kindergartner, then they had like the older kids kind of come on into the classrooms. And that's something that we'll still be able to maintain with the north and south buildings as well. And so there's just, and I love the idea too. I've already had some parents that kind of come on out and was like, hey, this is some of the great stuff that we do in our school. We'd love to be able to replicate it as we go to north, as we go to south. And So I think we'll just be able to take all those bright spots across the whole district and replicate them on this larger scale.
Mm-hmm. The best of the best. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And by also with the middle school, Lucas has kind of talked about this too, but with some of the maps, you kind of see that there's really be able to put wings. And so have like the sixth grade academy. And so still be able to kind of build some of those smaller communities, kind of keep, you know, like the sixth graders, you know, just kind of contained within themselves. And even being able to kind of just be almost coming through the facilities and the mapping with like an educational lens to be able to say how best we'll be able to kind of serve the eighth graders and the seventh graders and the sixth graders geographically with this new space. And there's a lot of great stuff that's already coming out, both in terms of servicing them well, but also in terms of like anti-bullying measures as well, because that's another one of the bigger concerns, rightfully so, but it's already kind of some of the stuff that's been discussed in the framework.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it helps reinforce a couple of pieces, because by having the smaller communities within the larger school, both elementary and key and middle school as well, you're also now going to better effectively utilize the teachers and the staff to build those relationships with the students. So as they go through from 6, 7, 8, you'll be able to identify and provide the support to the students, as opposed to having one teacher here, one teacher in another building, one teacher in another building. Now you'll have them all in the same building. Greater flexibility, greater efficiency, and hopefully a better output for the students.
I really think so. And that's, Lucas has talked about like that teaming mentality for some of the support staff, for the admin. And so there's a lot of great opportunities that are coming out of this. It's not, you know, it's not just to save money, or it's not just because of declining enrollment. It's really kind of taking a look, like you said, like how can we best align ourselves to that portrait of a graduate? And also looking at all these other factors, looking at the demographics and looking at the facilities that we have. And this just is a lot of great potential that we have, and that we are able to kind of move forward to. And I'm really excited for the next, we got about like 15 months before we'll, you know, kind of do like the ribbon cutting and start letting kids into to all these new schools. But I'm really excited about the work that's to come.
Yeah. And I think that's the other piece that I know we've talked, it has already been up for conversation in a number of places, but to the extent that people kind of respectfully woke up, came out of the woods, now they're aware, they can now participate to truly ensure that the planning, because yes, there is a boatload of work left to be done. And now they can be involved to help craft the right process to accommodate the entire community. So that's goodness. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to kind of get that kind of wake up call. But now that you got the wake up call, okay, now let's do what we need to do. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I haven't seen the numbers of like attendees to some of our meetings that high probably throughout COVID. We had at one point we had a packed room in council chambers. We had like well over 200 people on Zoom. I'm sure more, TV and YouTube. And now that we have also had a lot of those same folks start to kind of email us back, to say, how can we help? Or here's my background. And, you know, how can I kind of make this transition process as successful as possible? And that's fantastic, because we want to be able to gather people all along the way. You know, throughout this process, we did have some workshops, and where we had teachers and admin, community members, and parents and students, and to get voices along the way. But also now that there's something, it was something to react to. Now you can kind of see, this is the plan, this is the goal, and you know, we got a year and a half to get there, and it's I'm loving all of the folks that are kind of coming out and saying, how can I help? And we're going to continue to kind of keep pushing that and helping and including them. And whether or not it's we have some individuals that had ideas about, you know, the naming and the branding for some of these schools, which is, I've heard some incredible ideas already. And other ones that, you know, just want to say, here's my background. A couple of them that like are with mental health. And so it's like, well, great. You know, we got a mental health task force. We can kind of help, you know, maybe include you in. But also if there's just some, we have some ideas and we just want to throw, you know, some of the ideas out and get, you know, a listening session and seeing how some of those are reacted to or ways that they might be able to kind of provide some extra input. There's a lot of great stuff to come, and we want, you know, the more from the community that will be able to participate, the better product that's going to be at the end.
And I think giving us a segue, and deliberately by choice, give us a segue to our next topic. I think one of the key reasons why the decision really needed to be made when it was, because it also answers a question as we go forward, talk about budget, to talk about finances. It really sets you up to be much more effective and efficient financially, fiscally, never mind just education. Educationally is certainly your priority, your key charge, but you also have to do that in a fiscal manner. So as effectively is now, quote, deliberately addressed, oh, by the way, this is what we're doing. And yes, it's going to be hard, but we're going to work at it and make it right. But it then sets us up so that, you know, as we go forward, we'll be able to afford to do what we need to do. And that was the deliberate choice of the stabilize and level plus, et cetera, that we had talked about prior. And obviously it still takes a community vote, and hopefully they'll vote positively, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, because we have the override on June 11th. There's like mail-in ballots have already kind of come in, and then on June 1st, a Saturday, there's also you'd be able to vote directly at town hall and at the town clerk's office. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that that's gonna come through, because I think we've really tried to make the case about why the schools need this extra funding and why they've needed it for many, many years. And we're kind of, I know when we had that big meeting at the high school,
we had a former school member. Joint town committee and joint school committee.
And a former school committee member kind of came and said, what should have happened all along the way are small little targeted overrides that are, they're more easily passed, they're more digestible. But unfortunately it wasn't there. And this is the first override that's been asked in a decade.
17 years. So it was 2007 was the only successful one. So, yeah.
And so, I know, some folks might look at it and be like, it's a $6.8 million override, 6.3 to the schools, and $500,000 to facilities, which are just supplement the schools. But it's a long time coming. And that's where it's kind of built up to where it's at. But yeah, the idea is that if we are able to go and get this budget, we get the budget approved and we get the override passed, then our budget is at that level service plus, which does reincorporate a lot of the cuts that were made in past years. And it makes it so that we are more agile moving forward. And when you kind of double that in with this restructuring that we've done, make it so, if you do have an influx of population, say at one school, and whether or not that's just extra kids or it's just an influx of kids with special needs, that it's going to be so much easier with this new model, with everything, with just two elementary schools and one middle school, to be able to properly attack that and address that without thinking, well, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to do it. We can't afford a whole extra teacher. Now it's, well, we can just kind of spread that out amongst those eight classrooms. So that way everybody's able to kind of take that small hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to reinforce that point on equity and opportunity, and also kind of leading to the possibility. And clearly it's still a possibility that I know Lucas has talked to, Assistant Superintendent Paula Morano has talked to, where the in-house programs that we have now can get more equitably distributed. So they don't have to be one here, one there. They'll be distributed between the two elementary buildings and then the middle school, high school as required. But now there should also be some capacity in there to potentially generate some other income with other students coming in that meet those particular needs and requirements. So that, not that it's going to solve our budget issues, but it will help compensate, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I, from my understanding, there's been a couple of opportunities where towns have asked because they know what a great those specialized programs, how incredibly run they are here. And they've asked, can they actually kind of bus some of their children into Franklin? And that would have provided an actual revenue source for us. But we just didn't have the capacity where it is kind of so compartmentalized in the current system. But mm-hmm. we'll have, you know, moving forward. And I think there's also, too, that it was only touched on just a little bit, but with the closure of the Kennedy Elementary School, that not only can that kind of be, you know, potentially serviced as an expansion of the ECDC program, but there's also a lot of communities that utilize some of the building spaces as daycares centers,
mm-hmm.
specifically for teachers. Right. And so it can kind of, you know, there is an opportunity for added revenue, but I think even more importantly, that's an amazing benefit to be able to, if you're going out there and you're trying to attract some of the best teachers, and that to be able to say, well, you know, if you want to come on over here, we have made progress to make the salaries more comparable to surrounding neighborhoods. But we also have this great service where you can just kind of bring your kiddos into the town that you work in, drop them off, know where they are. If you want to go see them on your lunch break, you pop on over and you come back. I think, especially as we heard just last night, there was a lot of talk about the retention rates in Franklin.
Yes. Yes.
And for teacher retentions, they've been on a downward trend for the past, you know, since COVID, to the point where, you know, we only have about like 84% retention rate year over year right now.
It's not going in the right direction.
No, it's only been going down. And so, and it isn't something that's unique to Franklin.
No.
It is kind of, it's a teaching profession right now, post COVID, has only become more difficult and challenging, but at the same time, they had one list and they kind of showed, you know, about 20 communities and their retention rates, and we were way down at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can kind of be able to utilize this as well as that one extra feature to say, well, you know what, you know, if you're already here and you live in the daycare center that we have, you know, for your little ladybugs, it's another great reason to kind of stay, you know, the next year and the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of gets back to with that override too, that I think that there's, when you're looking at a community that is, you know, is just a couple of years out from having, you know, the 103 teachers that were let go, that have been continuously talking about a lot of the instability with the budget and the uncertainty moving forward. Now, you know, there's about like 35 teachers that if the override fails, you know, they're going to receive effectively a pink slip. I think if you're a young teacher, you're maybe not looking to jump over, even if you're more, you know, especially if you're a more experienced teacher with professional status, mm-hmm. like tenure, you're not looking to jump over to Franklin right now because of that instability. And so that's the other part with this override, just it really starts to kind of settle the ship. So that a way we continually look more attractive to any prospective employees.
Yeah, to take a moment or two, teachers, especially at the end of this time of the school year, certainly some are going to be having reached retirement age. That's all. All power to them. They've given their service. They have their time coming. Some, because of that early professional status, may be determined not to come back, maybe because it's just not working in this particular setting, or complicated by, with continued enrollment declines, you are already cutting some teachers anyway, whether the override passes or not. Those kind of you've got multiple parts in the fire there. You can't really, you need to kind of get a more of a steady state. So now you can start quantifying, well, this one's retiring. We can replace this one. This one's retiring. Oh, that position, perhaps we cannot fill. And then go through all those iterations to come up with, because I know it's still a question in terms of, you know, it's approximately 35, but it was approximately 45. It was approximately 30. I mean, the numbers is changing respectfully because the scenarios are changing. You've got some additional money from the state that wasn't there before. So what else is going to happen? Stay tuned. But there is an issue, and we can have a say as residents and voters to say, we value education.
Absolutely. And, you know, great, great points. And I think that one of the, when I've kind of talked to a lot of folks about this override too, it's, you know, George over at FinCom is always talking about, you get to the end of the rainbow and there's your pot of gold. You know, what are you spending? This isn't that. This is just to stop the bleeding. You know, I know, I think Chairman Mercer's called it like the tourniquet override. And because we're really just looking to try to just, yeah, to right the ship, to claw back on some of the cuts that were made in past years. Like one of them that's been gaining a lot of steam, the fact that just in the conversations is the fact that there are no librarians.
Yes.
You know, at our schools, and that's an accreditation issue at the high school level.
Right.
And where, you know, we'll have individuals, ESPs, that, you know, individuals who are, you know, the fantastic, you know, some of them, my kiddos absolutely loved all along the way, but that they're not trained librarians. And that is a requirement at the high school that we just don't have. And that mm-hmm. once that accreditation kind of comes through, that, you know, points out and that colleges look at, they're going to have to kind of ding us for the fact that the high school that we are, you know, expected to have a trained professional librarian, that we just can't afford. And so it's bringing back some of that as well. And so it's not this big, robust, you know, we at the end of the rainbow and all the stuff that we're buying with the override, it's just to stop the bleeding and to try to just maintain the great education that we have so that we don't have to just continually make cut after cut after cut year over year over year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not to say that the collaboration that's already ongoing and expanding to a certain extent as opportunity arises with the Franklin Public Library, where they've got, I think it's a program specifically for focused on the middle school. So they bring the library to the school with Callie or somebody else, I forget exactly, but that's a great program because I think from a outside perspective, it does two things. One, obviously it provides additional from the library, which is also a community resource. But then likewise, it exposes the students that, oh, I can go to the library and get books too, right? So it's a kind of two-way street, and that's all good.
It's fantastic. And, you know, great shout out to Miss Callie over at the library. She is a huge fan favorite over here in the Callahan household. And yeah, just does tremendous work through, I think it's like the BLAST program, coming into the middle school. And so, but still, you know, that's, you know, she works in the Franklin Public Library and then is able to come into the schools, but it's within the schools ourselves where you would expect, especially at the high school level, to have mm-hmm. a professionally staffed librarian, that it's just the budget isn't there right now.
So after budget, after redistricting, what else is on your plate?
You know, right now there's kind of I got my calendar marked for June 11th, not totally sure what's happening June 12th and beyond.
Right.
But there is still a lot of work to be done. You know, one of the things that will be coming up on Tuesday's meeting is discussion about some of the fee schedules for sports and for busing, especially kind of we have to start to lay that groundwork. If, you know, dependent upon how the override goes. And that was something that was. They just kind of did like a little teaser last night at the budget hearing. There'll be more discussion on Tuesday's meeting. Ultimately, what we're really looking at, though, is if the override fails, family members are going to have to, there's going to be a dramatic spike in both the cost to ride the bus, but kind of the one that bothers me, though, is the cost just to play sports.
Right.
Because we're not looking to say, well, if we can't afford, you know, if the override fails and we can't afford this, that there's just not a football program anymore. That's not, it's not healthy for the kids. It's not good for the community, but we're moving to a, like a self-pay status. And so like for, and so there's a, we, I've been looking at a couple dozen different communities and worked with Lucas and Dr. Dutch, and they have like a tiered system that they're working out. So, you know, certain ones, say like cross country, that just generally, you know, cost less to execute. The fee itself to play is a lot less, but ones like football and hockey, families are going to be looking at like $1,000 per, you know, per kid that, that say they want to play football. And again, this is just kind of contingent upon like a failed override. But what kills me with that is that, you know, there's going to be plenty of folks that, that do have the capability of, you know, paying $1,000 for the kid to play this, this one season sport. And there's also on the other end, individuals who kind of are like below the poverty line, like that there are mechanisms that we can still kind of go and help them get in. But there's a big gap between individuals who, you know, just do not have any financial ability to go and play, those that can very easily kind of go and pay to have their kid play. Everybody in the middle, you know, that was, it was me kind of growing up where that's going to be, it would be a huge strain. For my folks when I was a kid to drop $1,000 for me to play some of these sports. And, so it's one more reason why I'm going to try to fight as hard as I can to kind of get this override passed, because it's just, we kind of talk about equity. You know, that's tough to be able to say that there's going to be some kids that have amazing talent and amazing drive to play some of these sports, but that, you know, the families just can't afford it. And so they just, they can't.
Yeah. And one of the key concepts, clearly the numbers may have changed over time. So if you're listening, hopefully, whether you're new, the numbers have changed because of the process and the discussion and the fine tuning. That's all well and good. If you've been here, you've noticed perhaps some of those different changes, because on the transportation in particular, I think the budget subcommittee proposed and then the policy subcommittee also ended up revising it. So now it's down to the 500 as opposed to the 1,000, which had been toyed at some point. But there's an implication for that too, because that also changed the number of teachers along the way to compensate. And that's kind of the juggling ball that you still have in air until the decisions are finally done with the override. Hopefully it passes. If it doesn't, there are still hard decisions.
Yeah, there will be. And so we'll, and with like the buses, because that was one of the numbers that did kind of jump around a whole bunch, that it kind of gets to a point where, you know, there, we know 1,600 riders that pay. But if you keep kind of increasing the price higher and higher and higher, at some point the ridership is going to start to go down. And then the overall income that's, you know, coming in, the fees that are coming in to help sustain that drops as well. And so we kind of, so it's one of those balancing acts. We feel that at least with the $500, it's still a lot, you know, I'm going to have to pay for both of my kids, and, not looking forward to that, but, it's also not, you know, it's going to be 1,000 versus say 2,200, which is what was originally, kind of asked. But I think, you know, because there is that understanding of, you know, just trying to have that balancing act. Unfortunately though, as that kind of goes down, as you said, like the number of teaching positions, then, you know, it's less revenue that's coming in. So there's going to be more expenses that have to kind of start to get cut. So that we have, I think we have like, we'll have a meeting coming up on Tuesday. Then we have another regularly scheduled one on the 18th of June. But we're going to have an emergency one kind of in between that, right after the vote, if it comes out to be a no, because there's going to be a lot of hard choices that, like you said, like, you know, everything's kind of coming into focus, but that will have to be, you know, voted upon, acted upon, and kind of decided on if this failed. And it's not going to be great for families. You know, I think there's going to be it's not going to be great for families, for the community at large, especially the students. There's going to be so much lost opportunities for these kiddos. And so I'm really hopeful that everybody's hearing a lot of these messages and they see, you know, everything that's going on. And I'm fully cognizant of the asks that we're making, you know, for the community. This isn't light. You know, a lot of individuals kind of talked about, like, you know, just all the other costs that have kind of just continued along the way. And so it's not easy choices, but at the same time, a failed override is just going to be devastating across families and the entire community. And so I'm really hopeful that everybody's hearing these messages and goes out to vote. But if you still have any lingering questions too, feel free to reach out anytime. I'm happy to answer anything I can for you, kind of talk about, you know, how much, you know, you talk about how much the override's going to cost. But at the same time, if you got some kiddos that play football, play hockey, or ride the bus, how much a failed override's going to cost as well? Mm-hmm. Because you'll see that in your pocketbook, and then come the fall, you'll see it in terms of the programming that had to get cut or is not available too.
Tough choices ahead, but yeah, to reinforce, we've had a bunch of interviews that some of are still in queue, but they'll be coming out. So hopefully you'll have, between the meetings and the action items and the videos, and then obviously the conversations on the town council, I know a number of them are available for questions, certainly on the school committee, you and others are available for questions. Lucas and Jamie, there are answers out there. Please get them so that you can create an informed vote. And then cast that informed vote. Yeah, and I think while you mentioned the Saturday election, you can vote in the town clerk's office hours between now and then as well. And then at the high school on June 11th at 6 a.m. through 8 p.m. And then we'll have the results when the tally is ready. So, yeah. In the meantime, have a good weekend.
Thank you. You as well. And I hope all the listeners are able to sit back and, you know, enjoy this as they're barbecuing, sunbathing, and maybe tossing it outside.
Yeah. And maybe spend a minute or two and do some research to be prepared to cast that informed vote.
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Well, thank you for taking time. And to the listeners, thank you for participating. If you do have questions or comments, et cetera, contact info is available. Feel free to reach out. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.